This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, here's a question. Are schools in America flunking lunch? A 2007 school nutrition dietary assessment concluded most schools in America exceed USDA guidelines for the quantities of saturated fat, total fat, and sodium in the lunches we're giving our kids. And here's something else to chew on. The surplus beef and poultry that the USDA offers as free commodity items to our schools are held to a lower standard than fast food chains like McDonald's. In the past 10 years, the USDA paid $145 million for pet food grade spent hen meat that went into the school meals program. And yes, that does sound unappetizing. The average dollar amount spent per school lunch nationwide is just $1.25 of that is spent on milk. So what can school lunches tell us about the politics of welfare, food science, and agriculture companies? And what do they tell us about inequality in Michigan and through America? Joining us for the conversation is Susan Levine, who's a professor in the Department of History at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Her book's entitled School Lunch Politics, The Surprising History of America's Favorite Welfare Program. And Susan joins us from Chicago. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thank you.
And Jean DuRussell Weston joins us. She's program manager for Project Healthy Schools at the University of Michigan. Hello, Jean.
Hello. How are you today?
Good to have you together to talk about a subject that really matters to so many homes. Susan, I want to start with you. In your book, School Lunch Politics, when you're looking at what you call the surprising history of America's favorite welfare program, what do you mean by calling it America's favorite welfare program?
Well, what I meant when I wrote the book was that the school lunch program, which began in 1946 as a kind of partly a subsidy for the American farmer and partly as a way to maintain healthy children, it became in the early 1970s essentially a really important welfare program for poor kids. It was and still is the largest nutrition program for school-age children. And it's become a real poverty program, or an anti-poverty program, you might say. But at the same time, it's probably the most popular public program, maybe second only to, I would say probably even more popular than Social Security in a way, because when you start attacking school lunch, people always get very up in arms, and you talk about the quality of the food the kids are eating or who gets to eat the food. There's a lot of passion to it.
There is, and I know in your work, Jean DuRussell Weston, here you are as program manager for Project Healthy Schools at the University of Michigan, and thinking about, we've got some 740,000 Michigan school kids that are eligible for free or reduced price lunch, and that's nearly half of our state's students. So what impact do you see on these children who rely on school lunches, for better or for worse?
Well, I think that some kids actually get breakfast and lunch at school. And so if we can make these school lunches as healthy as possible, we've already helped kids to have half of their day or three-quarters of their day be healthy choices. So we can have a great impact if the school lunch program becomes healthier.
Who decides, when we say if it becomes healthier, who decides exactly what winds up in cafeterias? Who decides the school lunch budget? Talk to us, if you can both, give us a sense of the economics of school lunches. Susan, I'll start with you.
Well, I think that there's a very sort of complicated set of players. The federal government provides some cash subsidies, depending on the number of poor kids in the school and a variety of other factors. It also provides, as you said earlier, some amount of surplus food as well. Local players have a major role. So state legislatures and state education representatives determine local subsidies. And then cities, towns, school districts also decide on their budget criteria in different ways. And so the school lunch is a sort of complicated arena, both of budget and of menu.
And Jean, your thoughts, and how does the decision get made, as far as what will wind up on a plate in a cafeteria throughout schools in Michigan? Is there a great inequity between the districts?
Yes, there can be an inequity, because depending on your district and what policy you may have if you have a wellness committee and you have a policy that, you know, we're going to only have whole grain in our pizza, then your school district only has that. If you're in a poorer district that has to rely on basically whatever they're getting from the free and reduced lunch, then they're going to go with the most inexpensive food that they can find, which generally is not the healthy choice.
So give us examples of what's being fed to children in Michigan that, you know, in the lunches that really alarms you, concerns you.
Well, I think when we first came in, so we've been in operation for 10 years, and things have changed. And I want to thank Michelle Obama for Let's Move and her new push for the guidelines. So we have new guidelines coming out, and some of them are being, you know, enforced right now. But, you know, we would go in and you would see fried, lots of fried things, and most of them are getting away from that now. And we have baked French fries instead of fried, but lots of ranch dressing on everything. For breakfast, you could have a French toast stick as your choice for your grain instead of having, like, oatmeal. And there was nobody really enforcing what kids were choosing. And then a lot of places, the fruits were apples, and that might be the only choice. Hmm. And most kids are not going to take the time, or an orange, take the time to peel it. Or maybe they didn't even have a fruit choice. You know, it might have been a canned pineapple.
And probably in a lot of cases, the choices are, you know, what the kids are eating is also predicated on their school day. It could be such a compressed lunchtime that to get them through and out the door, that stuff gets thrown out. I remember seeing that when I was a lunchroom mom when my daughter was in grade school. I was astounded at how much went into the garbage can because they had to finish up and get out of the way so the next group could get
out. Yeah, that continues to be a huge problem because there's such a stress on academics. Mm. And now in Michigan, we have the new guidelines that, you know, kids have to pass these tests. And if they don't pass, their teachers get, you know, in trouble, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, the academics is really taking precedence. So we push kids through lunch and give them a little bit of time to walk around, and then we try to, you know, get them right back in a classroom. And frankly, you know, people are missing the whole point that kids that are eating well and exercising are going to be brighter in the classroom and be able to learn better.
Susan Levine, many of us still vividly remember the ketchup as a vegetable from the Reagan administration days. Mm-hmm. Is that mindset because we are talking largely about feeding children who are underprivileged, or does this also come from pressure from big agribusiness?
Well, I think it's both. And I think that something that Jean just said is really important because the school lunch doesn't exist in a vacuum. So the context of the child's day, you know, and the stress on, as she said, on academics that compresses the lunchtime is one factor. The source of a lot of the food that we get in the school lunches is, you know, is kind of these huge food service corporations that contract with the local school district to deliver food. And the school districts that are the poorest, as Jean said, need to get the most economical, you know, deal that they can get, and it's not always the healthiest choice. So it's the agribusiness, the food service business, the education business, that they're all combined to put a lot of stress on the lunch.
So what kind of conversations should be happening both at the local level and the state level, and then I guess we'll even say nationally, to even out the inequalities in our school lunch program, Susan?
Well, I think that people have started a really important discussion about the quality of the food that's on the plate, and that's what we really talk about most. But I think what we also need to talk about is how we're paying for that food, and how the decisions are made about priorities in school budgets and in public budgets generally, so that if we talk about healthy schools, healthy children, it's not just a matter of one child picking, having, you know, access to an apple and another to, you know, whole grain. It's also a matter of the choices that the adults make in the community about what our priorities are. So I think those are the kinds of questions that have to surround discussions about school lunch.
And Jean DeRussell-Weston, with your work with Project Healthy Schools, how are you trying to get these discussions happening in Michigan cities and school districts?
One thing we do when we go into a school is we help them start a wellness committee. And that usually consists of having, you know, a teacher, the principal, parents, kids. And the wellness committee talks about the healthy environment that the kids are living in and how can they make additions and changes. So that gives a lot more group power to the people that are actually in that school to make some changes. So we will also work with food service and say, you know, okay, so we have a wellness committee here, a group that's saying, you know, we want different things on the ad hoc line, or, you know, they always have a line where kids can just go and get extra things. And usually it's all candy and, you know, sweets and things like that. And so then they can work together and say, okay, you know, why don't you offer something that, like some granola bars instead of pastries? And then they work together within that school. And the best case scenario is that they have a district wellness committee and then they have a policy which they will put out to all of their schools that says, you know, we can't have fundraisers that sell candy.
Hmm.
So that's what we try to do in the school, is empower them to make the decisions within.
Do the changes that should be made in lunches depend on money or changing a mindset? Susan?
Well, I think both. And I think we see now in the last, I'd say 5, maybe 10 at the most, years, a real change in mindset. And there is a really kind of growing food movement that is very conscious of what we're eating, and that brings that consciousness to the schools and to the school lunch. And there's a lot more attention to the quality of the food than I think you would have seen, you know, a while ago. But I think we also need to think about the other side as well. It's both of those things together that are crucial.
And certainly, Jean, you must encounter this constantly, working in the state of Michigan, where education funding is such a sore spot and such an issue, that finding money to change things is tough.
It's very tough. There's two things, I think. There's money, which is a big deal, and then also, you know, putting the spotlight on that problem, because a lot of schools have a lot of bigger problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, they do care about what they're feeding their kids, but they have a food service group that is a national chain. And so even to make some of these changes, they have to, you know, go up to their national piece. They can't just change it all of a sudden. So there is both of those things going on. And I think, you know, sometimes you can make some of these changes to a whole grain crust from a, you know, white flour, and it costs the same, but many times it doesn't. And so then there has to be that agreement within the group. Well, okay, then we'll have to cut somewhere else in order to be able to do that.
But I think I hear from both of you that there is a challenge to parents to really get more informed and more active in this, because I guarantee most parents are not aware that, you know, this idea that the USDA paid all this many millions for pet food grade spent hen meat going into the school meals program. I don't think most parents would be very pleased and don't know it.
Right. Although, I think more and more parents are aware of these things. It's just a question of how do you influence change? And I think part of it is that you try to do it on an individual level where kids and parents are making decisions about healthy food. But you also have to do it on a kind of collective level or a community level where the community says, schools are important, lunch is important, these things are real priorities. What we see now, in my opinion, is a moment when the public sphere is really being shrunk. And I don't know, you know, what's going on exactly, but people are making choices to cut the public sphere. So I think we're in a kind of contradictory moment in a way.
And how do you see it, Jean?
You know, I think individual level, I mean, you know, trying to work one child at a time to make a difference. I also think, though, that the policy level is really where we're going to get the permanent change. So we have to be doing both at the same time. We provide education in the classroom to kids so that they know how to make a healthy choice. And then that, we are hoping, is going to filter to their parents because we send things home and, you know, they're going to learn. At the same time, we're working with people like Healthy Kids, Healthy Michigan to get policies in place that say, you know, kids should have recess before lunch so that they are not being so, you know, they eat and then they run outside and then they don't eat well because they want to get outside. And also influencing, you know, what can be offered in the lunch line. And we're trying to do that at a state level. Of course, there's also the federal level. And that will determine this, you know, what you're saying, the grades of meat and food that we're offering at the federal level. Unless we change that, the schools are going to take that because that's, you know, that's part of the program. So we have to be doing all three levels.
That was Jean DuRussell Weston, who's program manager for Project Healthy Schools at the University of Michigan. And she was joined by Susan Levine, who's a professor at the Department of History at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Her book is entitled School Lunch Politics, The Surprising History of America's Favorite Welfare Program. It's been very good talking to both of you. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Good talking to you.